You're listening to English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, number 38. This is English as a Second Language podcast, English Cafe, number 38. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in the beautiful city of Los Angeles, California. Remember to visit our website at eslpod.com and read the learning guide for this podcast. It contains a complete transcript of the podcast. Every word that we say is on our transcript. You can also get additional vocabulary and tips on learning English in today's learning guide. Today we're going to talk about, on the cafe, a little bit about news magazines in the United States, what the popular magazines are that people read. We're also going to talk about missing children and something called an Amber Alert. It's summertime, so lots of people are traveling. So we'll take a look at a map today and how to read a map in English. And as usual, we'll answer a few questions. Now let's get started. One of the questions that I get about once a week is about the music for ESL Podcasts English Cafe and where that music comes from, that jazz music that we use. It actually is a free piece of music, a free selection of music that comes with the software that I use to record, called GarageBand on a Macintosh computer. So it's actually not a regular commercial song. It's just some music that came with the software, and I really like it. I hope you like it too. Our first topic today is on news magazines, the popular magazines that people read in the United States. Now, there are many popular weekly and monthly magazines on different topics. There are entertainment magazines, magazines like People, which talk about movie stars and famous people. There are also famous sports magazines. The most famous is called Sports Illustrated, and that covers all different kinds of sports. And then there are news magazines. And these are magazines, of course, about the news. In the United States, there are three popular magazines. One is called Time. Another is called Newsweek. And the third is called U.S. News and World Report. I want to talk about the first two because those are the two most popular ones. Time magazine is the most popular magazine, news magazine, in the United States. Like Newsweek, it has a summary of the news from the week. It also has in-depth stories. In-depth, I-N-D-E-P-T-H. Usually a hyphen, I-N-D-E-P-T-H. In-depth means that it is a longer story, a story with more information, a story that gives you more information about the news. And this news magazine, Time, is also the oldest news magazine in the United States. It's probably most famous for its annual award called the Person of the Year. And every year, they select a person or persons who have had the greatest influence on the news in the world, or the greatest influence in the world, you might say. And this is person is put on the front cover of the magazine and called Person of the Year. It's not always a good thing, however. Sometimes the Person of the Year is someone who is has done a lot of wrong in the world. But usually it's someone who has done something right, has done something important. We used to call, the magazine used to call this person the Man of the Year, because it was always a man. But they've changed that now to Person of the Year. They have both men and women. Sometimes the Person of the Year isn't actually a person. One year, back in 1983, they named the Machine of the Year. And the Machine of the Year was the personal computer, which, of course, is now everywhere in the United States and in most countries. Well, Time has a couple of European, or rather, I should say, foreign editions. There's a Time Europe, a Time Asia, and a Time Canada. And these are magazines that cover the news specifically in those different areas or regions of the world. The other popular magazine is called Newsweek, N-E-W-S-W-E-E-K, all one word. And Newsweek is, like Time, a weekly publication that has summaries of the news, of the important news, as well as in-depth stories. It is sometimes considered a more liberal of the two news magazines, the more liberal one, liberal politically, that is. And it is also one that has a worldwide circulation. Worldwide, worldwide, all one word, means across the world and the entire world. Circulation is how many people read the magazine. So you can ask, what is the circulation of Time magazine? Means how many people buy it and read it. We usually use that term circulation for magazines and newspapers, not for television and radio. For television and radio, you would talk about the viewers, people watching, or the listeners, people listening, like to ESL Podcast, for example. So Newsweek is has a worldwide circulation, about 4 million people. They also have foreign language editions. There's a Japanese, a Korean, a Polish, Russian, Spanish, and Arabic version of Newsweek magazine. You can read it in those different languages, and some of you perhaps have read it in your native language. There are a couple of other weekly, or what we would call bi-weekly, meaning every 2 weeks. Another word for that is fortnightly. A fortnight, F-O-R-T-N-I-G-H-T, one word, means every 2 weeks or every 14 days. Not a very common term anymore, but you will sometimes see magazines referred to as fortnightlies. It means they're published twice a month or every 2 weeks. There are several political magazines. Newsweek and Time are news magazines, and the idea is that they're supposed to be not liberal, not conservative, somewhere in the middle. Of course, that usually doesn't actually happen. There are some magazines that are political. A very liberal magazine would be Nation, and Nation magazine is a I believe that's a fortnightly, every other week. And one of the most conservative political magazines is called the National Review. So if you are politically conservative, you have a magazine. And if you are politically liberal, you have a magazine. Of course, there are several magazines that are about political topics. In Great Britain, the most popular news magazine is probably The Economist. The Economist, E-C-O-N-O-M-I-S-T. It's an excellent news magazine. It has international, U.S., and of course, news about Great Britain. So those are some of the popular magazines. Magazines are good to read to help build your vocabulary. It's useful to try to read stories about the same topic every week because you have some information already about it and it makes it easier for you to understand. One of the stories that has been in several of the news magazines in the last few years is cases of missing children. These are children who are usually abducted from their home or from their parents to abduct. A-B-D-U-C-T means to take a person without their permission. We also call this a kidnapping. To kidnap, K-I-D-N-A-P, that's the verb. The noun would be kidnapping. To kidnap is to take a child or an adult against their will and take them with you somewhere. Usually, kidnappings are involved with people wanting money in order to return the person. We call that money ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M. But many, probably most child abductions or kidnappings are not for money. Usually they are, they can be one parent who's divorced or separated who wants to have the child back from the other parent. Sometimes they are strangers, that is, people that the family doesn't know who may take the child. Of course, it's a very sad and unfortunate thing that happens. In the United States and Canada, in the last few years, they've started a new system called the Amber Alert. The Amber, A-M-B-E-R, Alert. Amber Alert, an Amber Alert is when a child is taken, a child is abducted, the police, when they have some information about who might have taken them, usually it's, for example, the kind of car and perhaps the license plate of the car. This is a warning to everyone to be looking for that car. So they have a news announcement and they tell all the police officers and the public, just the people who watch TV and listen to the radio, to be looking for this person to try to catch them. And this is called an Amber Alert. It was named after a girl who was abducted back in Texas in 1996 and unfortunately was killed. And the Amber Alert is something that you will see in different states. Sometimes you will see an announcement even on the signs on the freeway, on the highway. Well, since we are talking about freeways and highways, this is a good time to talk about our next topic. It is the summertime, and so people are traveling more and more. And of course, if you are going to travel in a car, it's always a good idea to have a map. So I thought we would talk a little bit about the terms, the vocabulary related to maps and reading a map. The verb is to read a map. It's the same as to look at a map. Someone may say to you, "Do you know how to read a map?" means, "Do you know how to look at a map and figure out, understand where things are?" Well, maps go by different names. Most maps that you use to drive are what we would call fold-out maps. Fold-out, F-O-L-D hyphen O-U-T. Those are maps that are usually big pieces of paper, but they're folded several times so that it's smaller. So you take the piece of paper and you fold it in half, then you fold it in half again, and then you fold it in half again. That's called a fold-out map. Another kind of map that you would use when you were driving would be what you would sometimes call a guide. And these are book maps. These are maps that are actually books. And each page has a different section of the map. These are very popular, especially in big cities like Los Angeles and New York. Here in Los Angeles, there's something called the Thomas Guide. And that's the name of the company that publishes or makes the map. And it's a thick book, maybe, I don't know, 200, 300 pages of maps for all the different parts of the city. So sometimes you'll want to have one of those bigger maps. Now, when you look on a map, there is always a legend on the map. The legend, L-E-G-E-N-D, is a little box, usually in the corner of the map, that tells you what all the different symbols are, what all the different symbols on the map mean. This is also sometimes called a key, K-E-Y. The key or the legend is the part of the map that tells you what all the different signs and symbols mean. Now, on a map, you will usually have different signs or symbols or marks for towns and cities and metropolitan areas. A town is usually smaller than a city, and a city is smaller than a metropolitan area. Metropolitan area would be a place like Los Angeles, where there's one city, but then there are many other cities around it, and they all look like one big city, and that's what we call a metropolitan area. A city is smaller than that. A metropolitan area could have different cities inside of it. Here in Southern California, we have the city of Los Angeles. That's the biggest city. But there are also smaller cities like Santa Monica and Beverly Hills and Malibu. Those are all smaller cities in the metropolitan area. A town is usually much smaller in population, fewer people in a town. The word village is not used very much in American English, V-I-L-L-A-G-E, but you will see that in British English, and that's also a small town. Maps will often have indications of where rivers and streams are located. A stream is a small river, S-T-R-E-A-M, stream. A stream, and then you have a river, which is bigger. Often, you will also see indications of where lakes, ponds, and oceans are. A lake, you know, is what we would call a body of water, B-O-D-Y, a body of water. It's surrounded by land. A pond, P-O-N-D, is a small lake. And of course, an ocean is, well, the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Indian Ocean. Those are all large bodies of water. The most important thing on a map, however, are the roads, are the streets and highways where you're going to drive. We often use the term highway and freeway to mean the same thing. Someone says the highway, the freeway. Usually, often they're the same thing. If there's a difference, the freeway is usually a little bigger. A highway could be a smaller road than a freeway, but most of the time we use them to mean the same thing. There are a couple of other words you will also hear or see on a map. One of them is interstate, I-N-T-E-R-S-T-A-T-E. In the United States, we have interstate highways or interstate freeways. And interstate means that they go from one state to another. And these interstates are paid for by the national or federal government. And there's a whole system of interstates that connect all the different parts of the United States. Another term that you will hear is expressway, especially in the east part of the United States, in New York, in Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Massachusetts. The states out in the eastern part of the United States will often call their highway or freeway an expressway. E-X-P-R-E-S-S-W-A-Y. And an expressway is very similar to a freeway or a highway. Sometimes the expressways are toll roads. A toll, T-O-L-L, road, two words, is a freeway or a highway that you have to pay money. Most states do not have toll roads for most of their roads, but sometimes, especially in the eastern part of the United States, there are many toll roads. We have toll roads here in California. A toll, T-O-L-L, is money that you have to pay in order to use that freeway. And usually you have to pay it when you are getting on the freeway. If you use the toll road a lot, you can get an electronic ticket that means you don't have to stop and pay. There is a computer that can read your electronic pass or ticket and are able to take the money from you or make sure that you have paid in order to use that road. One of the things you'll see on a freeway or a highway is a rest stop, R-E-S-T, stop. And a rest stop is a place, you can guess, where you can stop and rest. Usually, these are located on big freeways or highways outside of the city. So there aren't any rest stops inside a city or a metropolitan area. But every 30 to 60 miles, most states have rest stops on both sides of the freeway where you can stop and use the bathroom and eat and get some water, that sort of thing. Now you're ready to read a map when you come to the United States or if you live in the United States in English. Now it's time to answer a few questions. Our first question today comes from Nicholas in France, and Nicholas wants to know what the expression get out of here means. Well, there are actually two meanings to this expression. The most common one is when you want someone to leave, when you are angry or mad at someone and you want them to leave the room or leave where you are. So you may say to your friend, "Why did you go with my girlfriend to the bar? I don't want to be your friend anymore. Get out of here," means leave. I don't want you here. In the last few years, however, there's another meaning to this expression, and it is when you are talking to someone and you don't believe what they are saying, or they are telling you something that's very surprising that you find difficult to believe. So your friend comes up to you and says, I just got a date with Jennifer Aniston. She's going to go on a date with me. And you say, "Get out of here," means you don't believe them. There's also a little difference in the way that you say it. You can say, "Get out of here," means leave. But if I say, "Get out of here," with that sort of intonation, that means that you don't believe the person. It's an informal expression that is become popular in the last few years. So thank you, Nicholas, for that question. Next question comes from Dennis in Vladivostok in Russia. He wants to know what the expression "followed by" means. Well, followed, followed, by, by, two words, means that something comes after something else. So if you are watching a television program, then the program ends and the new program starts. We say the new program or the old program, the one you were watching, is followed by the new program. It comes after that. And you can also use this expression when you are following another person. Usually that's something that is not a good thing. When someone else is following you without your permission, because perhaps they want to hurt you or do something bad to you, you can say, "I'm being followed by this strange person." They are following you. They are going after you, trying to find you or trying to get you. Next question comes from Aram. Aram is originally from Armenia, but is now living in New York City with his family. And Aram has a question. His father and he have a disagreement, and they want me to tell them who is right. And the disagreement has to do with the two expressions, "I'm sorry," and "excuse me." When do you say "I'm sorry," and when do you say "excuse me"? Aram says that you only say "I'm sorry" when, for example, you accidentally hit someone or bump someone or do something wrong. So if you are on the subway, for example, or a bus, and you are walking on the bus or subway, and you hit somebody as you are walking, you would say "I'm sorry" when you do something wrong. If, however, you are trying to, for example, get out of the bus, and someone is standing in front of you, and you want them to move, you would say "excuse me," meaning "I want to go by you, please move." So "I'm sorry" is usually when you accidentally hit someone. We would say bump, B-U-M-P, which is to hit very lightly. You use that when you are when you accidentally bump into someone or bump someone. The expression "excuse me" is when you are trying to get by someone. You want them to move. We also use "excuse me" when you are trying to ask a question of someone. For example, I want to know what time it is and I don't have a watch. I would say, excuse me, can you tell me what time it is? We wouldn't say, I'm sorry. There we would say, excuse me. So I'm sorry is usually for when you do something wrong. There is, however, a way of using the word sorry when you have not done something wrong. So Aram's father is also correct here. In British English, we, or they, sometimes say sorry when you didn't hear what someone said. So someone says something to you and you didn't hear them, you didn't understand them. In British English, you would say, sorry, meaning I didn't hear you, I didn't understand you. In American English, we would probably say, excuse me. Someone says something to you, you don't understand, you might say, excuse me, I didn't understand what you said. In British English, you would say more likely, sorry. Sorry, as a question, of course. So thank you, Aram, for your question. I hope I didn't cause any problems in the family with my explanation. Satsuki in Japan has a question about the expression to have something on someone. What does that mean when someone says he's got something on him or he has something on him? Usually that means that one person has some information about another person. Some information about what this other person did wrong, something that they did wrong. Maybe they did something illegal. Maybe they committed a crime. They did something bad. If you have information, you say, well, I have something on you. It means I have some negative, bad information about you or information about something bad that you did. Often we use that expression when the person is trying to influence the other, saying, well, you better not do anything because I have something on you. Means you have to behave in a different way. You have to act in a different way because I have this information. So you are trying to influence them. Our last question comes from Luis in Spain. Luis has a question about the expression to teeter on the brink. To teeter, T-E-E-T-E-R, on the brink, B-R-I-N-K. Well, that's an interesting expression. To teeter on the brink means to be very close to a dangerous situation. Usually we say to teeter on the brink of something. For example, the country is teetering on the brink of war, means it's very close to being in a war. To teeter as a verb means to move in a unsteady way, that is, you are not walking straight. You're leaning this way, and then you're leaning that way. You're not like you've had too much to drink, for example. You may teeter, means you're not walking or moving very well. The brink, B-R-I-N-K, is similar to the edge, and usually it means the point or the you're at a situation where something is very dangerous. And if you move a little more, you're going to be in danger. To be on the brink means that you are very close to being in a very dangerous or bad situation. So to teeter on the brink means that you are close to this dangerous situation. You are moving closer to this dangerous situation. You do not want to teeter on the brink. It's not usually a good thing. Well, that's all we have time for on today's cafe. As always, if you have questions, feel free to email us at ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.